going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We'd love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks, get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. cheers. Clink, clink. We engage you, the listener, and interact on a different topic each week. We've got loads of good tunes, lovely music, and lots of analysis to keep you going.
And interviews from experts or you young people telling us what you think about our daily topic.
That's always the best part of the show, Jackson, to hear what the listeners have to say. There's always lots of juicy comments and lots of different perspectives. Absolutely.
So stay tuned. Now, we all know a couple of NGOs in our working in our communities. Sometimes their work directly impacts us or affects us. And in some cases, we hear about them, but we're not quite sure of what they do. What we know is that networks of global NGOs work across the African continent, performing various types of work. Now, even though many appreciate the work of these organizations, they often face criticism for doing either too much or too little in their response to different situations. Still, there's no doubt that regardless of what your opinions are on these organizations, we can agree that NGOs play an important role in our societies, our social, political, and economic development, etc. Yet it does appear that many NGOs rub the African governments the wrong way. And we have heard of cases where operations are forced to shut down because the NGO is considered too diversionary or reactionary or whatever word they use when they're shutting it down. Corrupt or flashy, or that it's not having any type of impact or not living to its mission statements. Usually the shutdown of NGOs in our society is done by as a result of either them rubbing the existing political leadership in the wrong way or not towing a certain political line or ideology. So on the show today on Upfront, we look at some of the work the different NGOs do across the continent. Are they really making a difference in your society? Do you feel the impact of NGOs? Do they create a dependence syndrome, as some have argued? This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi with Nadia Sami in South Africa. And I'm in Washington, D.C.
But I don't believe in charity. To me, the best way of helping somebody is to develop their potential and not just donating something to them. And I believe the best way those NGOs can help people is to help them explore their potentials.
We have a lot of NGOs that are helping the government and the people because they are bringing the actual needs. They are satisfying the needs of the people in the societies directly. They become dependent on small allowances instead of starting on investments.
In my view, NGOs in Malawi are not doing a recommendable job because despite their presence, we still see so many people affected by poverty. And most of them are in the areas where there are NGOs programs. In my view, I think NGOs are here just to enrich themselves through the donations they get at the expense of poor people.
Yes, the purpose is they have to serve the public or the people, but maybe they don't reach to that extent that they are really, really helping. They should make sure that their programs are sustainable.
Yeah. My people waiting this chalet, you they listen to Jackson Bonganyi for Upfront with the For Voice of America.
They create dependence syndrome.
Well, that's a very controversial area, because if you say they create dependence, then you're looking at the problems that people have. If they do not come in to help people, then it will be very difficult for those people to have better life. I think they do create independence in that they are given means by which they would be able to realize a better living standard in the future.
Some are doing up to their expectations, but the others, I don't know whether that is the nature of their work, the others are not. USAID, there's a lot of things in education, in other fields, the other technical fields. ICAR2 is like that, and BTC is a technical corporation. It does help in a lot of fields, at least they are doing somehow. And for any society to develop, it needs some help, any kind of a hand to push it up. Yes, because they are helping a certain society which has been in a ditch to come to the surface. No, when the society reaches its surface, there is no any more need of the NGOs to do more work. Because if it continues like that, then that one will be putting those people's minds in a sense of depending on what the NGO will feel them.
I'm Nadia Sami in Cape Town. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to Upfront, the hottest program on the Voice of America. You know this, so do stay tuned. We've got another important show, important topic lined up, great interviews and hot music coming your way. In so many African countries, NGOs are often independent development actors working with government or directly independently with local populations, and they operate mainly on a non-profit basis, sometimes using volunteers and non-paid staff, and in almost all cases it's really a labor of love and commitment that keeps the operation going.
NGOs need money to perform their work, even though some of the people that work there are on a volunteer basis. But they do receive funding from either rich nations to pursue programs in poor nations. Some of this work includes advocating for the less privileged, undertaking communal development work, etc. Still, what's up with those flashy cars that we see, you know, the big SUVs? I spoke to Matilda Mutanguha, making her comeback here on Upfront. She's now in Zambia, in Lusaka, and she's volunteered with a couple of NGOs during her time in college. This is her take on the issue.
I think that if the funds are adequately allocated to the people that are like the recipients, the correct recipients, I'm not talking about the actual workers at the NGOs, then I think it's a great cause.
Okay.
I feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's dispersed in such a ridiculous manner that the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see any of these funds.
And you, as a volunteer, really, you're not a recipient of those funds. It's just that the technocrats Or the officials of that NGO, you know. So there's a double exploitation here. Like they exploit you as a volunteer and also the community on which they're working because they're not even giving them the money. They're eating it themselves.
There's no exploitation on my part because it's something that I chose to do.
At least,
but at least you
expect as a bit of a, you know, remuneration on you know for the work you do. And so that explains the flashy cars, I guess we see, right? The big SUVs.
Exactly. That are supposedly trying to get the food to these poor people, or trying to get the resources to these poor people. But then these cars are used for personal needs most of the time.
The time when you were working for these NGOs, who evaluates the work that you do?
I think they have like state auditors that come in and audit and see how the funds are being dispersed. But that's only in certain countries, because when I was in Rwanda, they actually had people come in and monitor and see, like, because I think they were very... they were questioning the fact that these NGOs were driving all these amazingly expensive cars and all the money was going to fueling these cars and making sure these workers, these expatriates had like an extremely comfortable lifestyle, right? Which went against everything that that was in the mission of the NGO.
So
you had people come in, exactly, come in and like monitor and see how these funds were being used, if any of these resources were even getting to the people to begin with.
Okay.
So I think that there are bodies in place to monitor that, but that's, again, only certain countries do that.
Now, that's not to say that not all NGOs fall in that category. What is the problem here?
I think the problem is the people that are on ground, right? The people that are actually carrying out the mandate of the NGOs.
Okay.
So you have the NGOs have this amazing mission. You know what? We're going to go out. We're going to help the indigent people that can't afford these services. We're going to go out and help all these poor people. And then they have a mission in place that's stellar. It's great. It's, you know, it's rock solid. Then when they come to these countries, they have people in place to implement, like, the different provisions within this mission. So that's where the problem comes in, because these people also have their own personal interests.
They see this as a cash cow, you know.
Exactly. They're given a lot of leeway because it's like, okay, you're on the ground, so you obviously know what's going on with that population and you know how best to handle the situation, right? So I think that's another thing. They give them a lot of discretion. I know there's some organizations where the actual the funders will come in and you have to write a detailed report as to where your funds are being used, what projects are coming out of these funds, how you allocated all the money. So that way it's very, like, strictly monitored, and that way the recipients actually get the benefits.
Okay, so that's like you can tell from the size of an NGO that the type of impact they're having on a community. So if you see less flashy cars and big offices and workers, then you know that this NGO actually does do the work. They put the money to use.
Not necessarily. They could just choose to not be as flashy about the way they're using this money, right? But I feel like the smaller the organization, the easier it is to monitor the workers and figure out how this money is getting to the people. And the bigger the organization, there's all these little loopholes that can go around. And once the organization has been in place for such a long time, there's different mechanisms that are put into place where these people can actually go, like, try to dodge the system in a way where they can actually, let's say, for example, the UN, right? The UN is a huge organization. They have all these different units that, like, stem from this one.
Like the World Food Program,
exactly.
UNAIDS and all that.
Right, right. But this is a huge organization. This is an organization that have over 300 workers. And then in the different regions, they have local staff who know how to deal with the system, who have obviously been entrenched in the whole corruption. And they start telling the expatriates how the system actually functions. You see, so then now the expatriates are sucked into that, and then in order for the system to actually work, they have to adhere to some of these illegal, ways of doing things.
Sinister ways of doing business. And then at the end of the day, you find that all the money is lost in that process of...
Exactly, and then it's all about where is the money, you know, who's using the money, how come the victims haven't even been, like, compensated for the money they were promised, blah, blah, blah. It's just a continuous cycle, yeah.
That was Matilda Mutanguha. She is in Lusaka, Zambia. This is Upfront on the Voice of America with Jackson Vunganyi and Nadia Sami. Now, Nadia, many African governments, mainly those in less democratic societies, are sometimes disturbed by the role that these NGOs play. In fact, many have been expelled and others have been denied work permits to work in countries, for example, recent stories of Eritrea in the Horn of Africa and in Somalia, where food aid has not been able to reach those affected by the famine because militia groups like the Al-Shabaab are not letting any Western-affiliated NGOs work in the areas.
This is true, Jackson, and it's to the detriment of the people. Because in cases where NGOs have been expelled or have been denied permits, it means that there are so many pairs of hands less to help, whether it's with medical care or with providing food parcels or warmth, clothes, basic care. And it's really to the detriment of the people. In most cases, NGOs are true to the cause and providing a service that cannot really be found elsewhere in the country. In many cases, the services offered by government departments are not sufficient, or sadly, in some cases, no services are offered at all. And so we find that in many situations, the NGO sector is in fact filling a very important gap in communities.
Honestly, I have never gotten a chance of getting close to NGOs, even getting any help from an NGO. But one thing for sure I know, that there are some NGOs that are helping pay for students. Like in this school, there is Orphans of Rwanda, I think it's an American-sponsored NGO, and it helps pay school fees and maintain students. And there's Caritas Rwanda, I've heard it builds for orphans and widows. So I think, yes, they are there and they're trying to help it make a difference, especially in this country where there was a problem of the genocide. They are trying to rebuild the lives of the people who were affected by the genocide. And I think they are trying to make a big difference. Well, every NGO has its own objective. And we are looking in Africa where almost each sector is still weak and still fragile.
To a good extent, NGOs are doing good to our people or to our communities. They go down to people, like in the education sector. They help the vulnerable children to get education, shelter, to get medication, to get water.
Oh, which way?
Thank you to all our listeners for your opinions. We love hearing from you. It's the best part of the show where we get to hear what our listeners are saying about our topics. You tuned to Upfront on the Voice of America. Keep those comments rolling in. You can email us to upfront@voanews.com. That's upfront@voanews.com. Or follow us on Twitter or find our page on Facebook. In case you've just joined us, welcome to it and thank you for being with us today. Like we do each Wednesday, you know how we do. This is Upfront. I'm Nadia Sami coming to you from Cape Town, South Africa, and Jackson Vungani is doing his thing in Washington, D.C. This is the part of the show where you get to express your opinion and talk about the topic we're discussing today. And we're talking about the role of NGOs in Africa. Here's what you had to say.
Like in Rwanda, World Vision is doing a tremendous work in helping the local communities, look people, but especially the vulnerables, save children. They are doing a tremendous work in Rwanda. They have changed the lives of people, especially the vulnerables. When you observe rightly, you prove it out that they prove to independence, not dependence. They give them what is necessary to improve or to make their lives good. And then after like 5 years, those people are left independent, when they can work for themselves, when they can contribute what they need in their lives, minus that constant support.
I see that some work with the NGOs doesn't come well to benefit the real community, because you find that the NGOs in Africa, they come with very big cars, high salary of the officials. You find that more than half of their budget is spent in their luxury stuff of way of living, more than that is consumed by the people they are supposed to be serving. The benefit of the society from the NGOs, the capacity they should be having to provide the services to people, it's not the best. They create more dependency.
It is us. Actually, we don't even need the NGOs. I think we need ourselves to stand up and fight against these things that are eating up the African continent.
Thanks for those opinions on today's topic. As always, our listeners give us real food for thought, so thank you so much for your contribution to our show. While the global rise of NGOs has been accompanied by the development and widespread dissemination of the myth of NGOs, to some, they form part of the solution to underdevelopment in Africa, and to others, they are the problem with Africa. So this is quite intense to grapple with, Jackson.
Many believe that NGOs promote a dependency on the continent instead of encouraging self-sustaining solutions to Africa's development. They create situations where people need more help. Yet we can't argue with the fact that civil society across the African continent has benefited tremendously from the help and education that some NGOs have to offer. Okay, so for more on this discussion about the role and impact of non-government organizations, the different non-government organizations that work in our communities, I reached out to my colleague here. He has worked extensively with NGOs in East Africa, I think in Kenya specifically and in the Sudan. John Tanza Mabusu is my colleague here at the Voice of America. So, John, how effective was the NGO in working with the community or for the cause that it was working on?
Thanks, Jackson, and it's my pleasure to be on this show. I worked with an NGO that has been doing media in Sudan, and I also worked with another NGO that has been doing advocacy on behalf of the refugees. And let me just pick the first one that has been working on advocacy on behalf of refugees. The NGO has been reaching out to refugees who are in hiding in Kenya, because if you look at the Geneva Convention on Asylum, you're supposed to ask for asylum in your first country of asylum. Let's say if you are fleeing from Uganda and you end up, you land in Nairobi and then proceed to U.S., if you seek asylum in U.S., it will not be granted to you because your first country of asylum is Kenya, where you first landed.
Right.
So there were lots of refugees from Great Lakes region who came all the way from Rwanda to Nairobi. And some of them were in Tanzania, some of them were in Uganda. So they could not get asylum in Nairobi, and they were living in a very deplorable condition because they were hiding from the police.
Right.
And
it was too close to their threat.
Yes.
So but this, because of these regulations, they were not allowed to move on to...
Yeah, they were not allowed to get any papers. They
okay.
were not
so that to, organization was there to advocate...
On their behalf.
On their behalf. Was yeah. it successful? In
it
you?
Was successful.
They
it
were
was.
Able to change some laws.
Some laws were changed.
On
some,
a policy level?
Yes. MPs okay. from Kenya were taken for a retreat in Mombasa, and they were told that, yes, these rules are there, but the reality on the ground is that refugees are human beings.
Okay. Yeah. So that's one case of where you worked in an NGO and yeah. it was actually successful. Now, one of the main criticisms that I've heard about non-government organizations is they have all this NGO jargon. Like they use big words. When you see like working
right.
papers
right.
from all these different ones, they have words like... mundane phrases, I don't even remember.
Empowerment, eradication.
But how are they able to express to their constituents their goals if they are written in such very complex jargon?
You see, the reality of the matter with the NGOs and their benefactors is that most of the time, most of these NGOs are donor-focused. What they do is to get money from donors. They are not focusing on the benefactors, the beneficiaries
Absolutely.
Of their projects.
Okay.
They're all working towards making the project successful so that they get more funding.
Money.
But
okay.
successful is relative.
So their
meaning,
goal is to make more money
yes.
and less... To if
yes.
that's changed,
successful,
whatever change it is.
Successful is relative. Why am I saying that? Simply because it could be, the NGOs could be seeing their work as successful, but the benefactors are not feeling it.
Thank you, John Tanza Mabusu, for talking to us today.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
All right, bye. So Nadia, you know, say what you want about NGOs. We've had all these criticisms, but we know that not all of them, we can agree that in cases of wars, natural disasters, NGOs have played a great role in providing relief to people and in many cases saved lives.
Absolutely, Jackson. Like we mentioned earlier, there are situations unfolding in so many countries where these are basic services that the NGOs are providing that the government is not providing. And so it's become a crucial source of aid, of medical treatment, etc., that were those NGOs not there, that actually wouldn't be, those services wouldn't be available to the people. And NGOs do tireless work. People don't work in NGOs for the money, as we all know. People who work in NGOs and start NGOs and who are committed to the cause are there for love of their fellow human beings, because they want to see a difference being made, because they can't stand to see their fellow brothers and sisters suffering. It's hard work, it's selfless work, and somebody's got to do it. And so we owe an immense debt to our NGO workers across the continent. Thanks for hanging out with us today, guys. We always love having you on board and we love to hear from you. So keep those comments coming in to upfront@voanews.com. It was awesome hanging out. We'll be here same time, same place next week. I'm Nadia Sami signing off from Cape Town, South Africa.
And I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington.
Until next time, goodbye.